Welcome to the Career Changes podcast, where we believe that it is never too late to redefine your path, rewrite your story, and reignite your passion for what you do. Are you ready for a career-changing adventure? Before we dive into these inspiring stories, we need your support. Hit the subscribe button, leave a review, and join our community of dream chasers. And then, be ready to find your inspiration. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of The Career Changers. Our guest today is Sira Bayer, a professional dancer turned life and business coach. She started this business after a 20-year career in dance because the people who helped her grow when she was stuck changed her life. And there is no better feeling than being able to do that for others. Today, we are going to inspire you with a conversation about her career change journey, how she found a new life purpose, and how you can be heart-centered in business and life. Welcome, Sira. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So let's start with your background. How did you start your professional life, or better, what was your first job?
My very first job, I always worked. So I was one of those kids who like babysat when I was, you know, like 11, 12 years old. So I've always been working since I was very, very young. I worked all through being a teenager. So I don't really remember a time that I wasn't working.
Oh, and so did you have a dream job when you were a child?
Well, when I was little, I wanted to be on Broadway. I wanted to be a Broadway star. That was my goal.
So I guess that in part you realized that dream based on what your career became later. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been dancing. I'm still involved in music. I've choreographed for musical theater and been involved in musicals. And, you know, it's never too late. People start on Broadway when they're older. So if I ever still want to move to New York and pursue a career in Broadway, I could do that. What I realized about being on Broadway was that it meant I had to live in New York, and I've never wanted to live in New York.
Oh, so you had a career in dance then when you grew up?
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that? How did you progress your career before you arrived to the pivotal moment when you wanted to change?
Yeah, I never had an idea very clearly of what I wanted to do. There was not particularly a goal beyond just that I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I wanted to have fun, and I wanted to do something in the arts, and I wanted to follow my passions, and I didn't want to have a regular job. So those were the things I knew for sure. And I went to college kind of late. I was 19 when I started, and I spent a lot of time in, we have like junior college here, and I took lots of different things, and I pursued lots of different things, and I just kind of was trying to figure myself out. And dance has always been a passion of dance since I was a kid. And it really just emerged, like opportunities started presenting themselves. I started getting asked to teach classes. I really liked teaching. And after college, I opened my own dance studio. And so I ran a dance studio for many years. I had a dance company. I toured the world and was lucky to be able to tour and travel and teach and perform in many countries all over the world for a long time. And then I moved to Los Angeles and started pursuing doing more commercial work. And I was also teaching at a college here in Los Angeles. And so I was really just kind of following opportunity and interest. And that's what it was. There was never really a plan.
Well, I guess dance was your passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you describe that specific moment when suddenly you started to feel that something was shifting for you? And how did you initially react to those feelings?
Yeah. I think it's mostly that dance is a really hard career. I've been very lucky. You know, I still teach, I still dance, I still perform. It's no longer my full-time thing. I've transitioned it into being something I just do for myself. But as a career, it is incredibly challenging. And it's not a career where you make a lot of money. Even people who are in big professional ballet companies and really well-known companies, they don't make a ton of money. And it is incredibly hard on your body. And so what started happening for me was I got older. I was in my mid-30s, And I was teaching like up to five dance classes a day, and I was in rehearsals until midnight with people who are 18, 19 years old who had all this energy. And my body was changing, and I started to really feel the expiration date on like physically how long I was going to be able to keep going at that level. And then reconciling that with the fact that I had no savings, I had no 401k, I had no retirement ability or plan. I had never really made ever enough money that I could get ahead. I always, kind of did okay and mostly was able to like cover my bills and get by month to month. And I was happy with that when I was younger because all I wanted to do was dance. But when I started to get older, I was like, I'd like to eventually be able to buy a home and like have some more security. And so I think it really was just the time in my life where I started recognizing that I never lost my passion for dance. It never stopped being important to me, but I did start looking at the limitations of it as a career in terms of generating security for myself.
So, what were some of the biggest challenges you face when you started contemplating leaving the dancing industry, even if that is something that you're still in some ways doing? How did you overcome them?
A big one internally, two big ones internally. The first one was just having to admit to myself that even though I'd always been mostly self-employed, I didn't really know anything about business. And I think that most artists and creatives have that, where like, if I was honest, I was like, I was kind of a freelancer and a hustler, but that's not the same as knowing how to build a company and run a company. And so I always thought of myself as a small business owner, but really I was just self-employed, which is not exactly the same thing, right? Like I had a lot of 1099s. And so there was that part of like, I just had to admit to myself that I didn't know much about business or marketing or how to structure a business, and that if I wanted to move into an area of like building a business, I was going to have to learn those things and just get honest about what I didn't know. And I think a lot of artists and creatives are like, oh, I don't like that stuff. Like, I don't like business. I don't like sales. I don't like marketing. I don't like thinking about those things. I just want to do the fun part for me. And I had to like really reorient myself to how I thought about what business was, and that business could be really creative and interesting if I was willing to look at it that way. So that was one major mindset shift that I had to make. The other was that because I was teaching dance at a college, I think for a lot of artists, and I know this is true in dance, like the kind of main careers are like, are you dancing on TV, in movies? Are you dancing behind like pop artists on big tours? Those are the ways that people are like successful in the arts. So you tell someone you're a dancer and they will ask, maybe in LA, like, who have you danced for? Or, what artists have you danced with? Do you do music videos? What does that mean? And if you're not successful in that way, the other way that you would be successful is I would tell people I was a dancer and they'd be like, oh, like what? And I would be like, well, I teach dance at a college. And they'd be like, oh, right. Like, as an artist, to be a teaching artist at the college level gives you some social credibility and people take it more seriously. They take your art more seriously. They think of you as being a more successful artist. And there was some ego and some attachment for me around holding that position and giving that up. And the idea that, like, the job I had, I was very lucky to get, I didn't have a master's degree. And so I was like, if I leave this job, I might never get another college job again if I don't go to graduate school, and I don't think I'm going to. And it comes with a certain social cachet to say you're an art professor at a college that I liked and I felt very identified with, even though that position doesn't come with very much money. It comes with some like social credibility. And so I think I really had to work myself around the idea of like letting go of this title that I thought gave me some, clout or validity or a credibility as an artist.
Yeah, that's definitely a big thing when transitioning career, leaving that feeling. We have a status, and then what are we without that? So, how did you navigate this transitional period between leaving your job in the industry or mainly focusing on that and finding a new purpose?
Yeah. I had opened my coaching business when I was still teaching at the college. And it was because I didn't make enough money at the college. I was teaching so much, but I still wasn't making enough money and I needed to be able to do something else. And coaching, first of all, I loved receiving coaching. I've had life coaching a lot in my life and business coaching that was very supportive to me. And I really enjoyed the modality of it. And also, it's so much of what you do in the arts. You're constantly being coached, giving and receiving feedback, helping people improve. There's a mentality in any arts or a sport where you're always trying to get better. And that mentality applies really well to life and business coaching. And so I had already started that business. And at the beginning, I mostly worked with dancers who knew me from my previous career. So it was people who were trying to start dance companies, people who wanted coaching around sharing their creative work professionally and building their confidence that they could share their creative work professionally. And that was a really nice compliment. And then I think it was just the realization. I had something that happens sometimes when you work at colleges is your classes are based on enrollment. And so if you don't get enough students enrolled in your class, they can cut your classes. And that can happen with no warning. And so it was like a couple days before a semester was supposed to start, I got a message saying that they were cutting several of my classes, which would literally cut my income in half with like 3 days warning. And I think that was kind of the last straw where I was like, I can't live like this. As an adult, I can't find out on the 25th of the month that I'm going to lose half my income when I have bills to pay. This is not sustainable. And really recognizing that in my own business, I'm never going to fire myself and I'm never going to give myself a salary cap. I can make as much money as I can believe that I can make and I'm willing to pursue. And that mindset shift, I think that just like made it happen for me. And so a lot of people in the States, when you're a part-time faculty at a college, in between semesters, you go on unemployment for a few months because you don't really know if you're going to get hired back. Every semester, they could not hire you back. And so spring semester ended. So it was May. And the next fall semester started at the end of August. And I told myself, I'm going to use this few months of unemployment as my runway. And I'm just going to go all in on my business. And in my mind, I knew I'm not going back in the fall. If they offer me classes in the fall, I'm not going to take them. And so that's what I did. I used, which was maybe like all totaled of $2,500 to $3,000 of income I knew I was going to get from unemployment and said, this is how much time I have to make this happen. And I went all in on my business during that summer and haven't gone back since.
That's a great story. So let's talk about how to be heart-centered in life and business. That is something that you help people with. So what does it mean, first of all, to be heart-centered in our lives?
For me, it means to put being a human first. So when I was a dance teacher and I was working with people, people get so caught up in technique. Everything's about technique. And I would always tell my students, you're a human first, you're an artist second, you're a dancer third. Your technique needs to support what you want to create and what you want to say. And what you want to create and what you want to say comes from who you are as a human being. And I think in business, it's the same thing, being a human first, a practitioner of whatever you do, second, and a business owner, third. And always putting your humanity and the humanity of your clients first is really what it means to me to be heart-centered. And something I encounter a lot, I'm in business Facebook groups and I'm watching entrepreneurship conversations all the time. And I'll hear people say, like, what's the most lucrative business to start? I started this business because I thought it would make the most money. I went into this career because I thought it would make the most money. What ends up happening for those people, if they are successful, is you build a business and then you realize you're making money, but you're not happy. You're not fulfilled. You don't care about this. You're not passionate about it. It's not what you want to do. Business is really hard. And so I always recommend to people when they're like, what business should I start? My answer is the one that you care about so much that on, during the times you're not making any money and everything's really stressful, you still would not want to do anything else. And so for me, that's what makes it heart-centered, is that you couldn't imagine doing anything else because you care about it so much.
Yeah, that's a very powerful answer. And so, why our intuition is important when we want to live heart-centered lives?
Yeah. So my business is called Intuitive Edge Coaching, and I called it that because people talk about your competitive edge in business, and I really believe your intuition is your competitive edge. I believe it's your competitive edge in business, and it's your competitive edge in art. It's your competitive edge in life. People can copy your techniques. People can copy your strategies. People can pop copy a blueprint, but your felt sense of timing and what's right is innate to you, and that is uncopyable. No one can duplicate that. That is something that is unique to you. And honing strategy can get you pretty far, but honing your instincts is what will take you much, much farther than that. And I think that's the difference between being good at something and being great at something, is that you're not just following a formula, you're really getting to know yourself and your instincts and what feels right to you, even sometimes when it looks crazy to other people or it doesn't make sense on paper, but you're like, no, my gut says this is the right thing to do. This is the right way to do it. I know it doesn't make sense, but this is what we're going to do. That's something that can't be replicated, and it also can't be taught. It has to be honed through you spending time with yourself and getting to know yourself and building trust with yourself.
So many times, I think anyone thinking about their business or wanting to make their business thrive, they will probably focus on skills or more of practicalities. But how can we actually use our intuition to make our business thrive? And I guess many times it's also about how do we allow ourselves to follow our intuition.
Yeah. I think that's about that trust piece. And I think a big part of what I do as a coach, I know that a big part of what I do as a coach is I help people trust themselves more. I literally had a client tell me yesterday, I feel like in the work that I'm doing with you, I'm becoming more of myself. And so much of it, I think, is first recognizing how often you're making decisions by thinking about what other people would do, what other people will approve of, what you think other people will like, what you think looks the best, what you're guessing is going to make the most money. And all of these are external factors. And I call it mind reading, right? You actually don't know what other people are going to like. You're just guessing. You don't know what other people are going to approve of. Maybe you have some experience with those other people, but so often we're making decisions from this place of trying to essentially trying to people please, trying to calculate what's going to be the safest decision to make. Building self-trust is about getting into, okay, I know what everyone else might think. What do I think? What do I feel is right? And then we build self-trust by testing, right? You're going to be scared to do something that you're worried that people won't like. You're going to be scared to do something that might be unpopular, that might go against what your industry says or what your family wants, or, right? Like that is scary. And there will probably be fallout. There may be people who don't like it. You're not going to be able to do anything on earth without there being people who don't like it. That's just going to happen. But you try it, right? You test something out while you're scared and you say, my gut says this is the right thing to do. And you try it and you see what happens and you show yourself, okay, I went by what I wanted to do. And like, I'm okay. I survived. It wasn't terrible. And even if it didn't work exactly the way I wanted it to, I did exactly what I wanted to do. And I'm proud of that. And then you try again. And so it is, you know, just like with building trust with another person, you have to give them a little bit and see what they do with it. There's always a little bit of risk involved. You always have to lead with that vulnerability of trying something that's a little bit scary. And I think that decision-making process of trying to pick the safest thing, right? That's the first thing we have to start shifting out of, is rather than choosing what we think is going to be safest, being willing to be a little bit bold and take some risks and not go for the safest thing, but go for the truest thing.
So for anyone that is quite new to this approach or concept of listening to our intuition, what are ways that we can cultivate a stronger connection to our inner guidance?
Good old-fashioned meditation and journaling, I think, are the easiest ways. And if you're not a big journaler, I do recommend actually like journaling on pen and paper if you can, because our hands are connected to our heart directly, right? Chakra-wise and energetically, our hands are an extension of our heart. So just sit down and write, and you don't have to be like Dear Diary, but if you have trouble starting, you could just start at the top of the page, write a question like, what do I really feel in this situation? What do I really think I should do? If I wasn't worried about other people, what would I do? And just start writing. And you might surprise yourself. If you physically can't, voice note yourself, right? Like open your phone recorder and just start talking. I'm a big conf like I like to talk to process. And so I'll put my headphones on so it looks like I'm on the phone and go for a walk around my neighborhood and talk. And I'm just voice recording to myself what I think. And meditation, just sit in the quiet and listen to yourself. Do a body scan, right? Like ask yourself, like, where am I feeling tension in my body? Where am I feeling relaxation in my body? Start to build a two-way communication relationship between your body and your mind, which is usually running all the time. So the more you can get quiet and get still, and literally just ask yourself what you think and give yourself space to process the answer. Those are the simplest ones, and they don't cost anything. You don't need any help for that. You can do it in your car. You can do it in the bathroom at work. Like you can go anywhere and just go close your eyes and take 10 deep breaths and get still with yourself, or bust out a piece of paper and a pen and write down, what do I really feel right now?
So, what type of advice would you give to someone who feels stuck in a career they once loved but no longer feel passionate about?
This is potentially going to sound a little harsh, but maybe there are other people like me who find it comforting. All of life is made up. We're all going to die. I know that that seems like harsh, but like sometimes we get so
It's
caught up with,
true. It's true.
we
I
get so caught
mean,
up with this stuff that doesn't matter, and we can keep ourselves there for years. And I think when we really get down to the essential truth of what this life is, it's very short. It is very short and it's very precious. And so, thinking about if I looked back on this at the end of my life, would I be glad that I stayed here for years and stressed myself out and agonized over what everybody else was going to think? Would I be glad I didn't follow my heart? Or will I be proud of following my soul's in aliveness, even when it was scary? I think we're always, there have been all of these studies where people talk to people at the end of life in hospice care, and the most common regrets are, I wish I hadn't worked so much. I wish I hadn't people-pleased so much. I wish I hadn't given up so many of my passions. Like, I wish I hadn't wasted so much time doing stuff that wasn't important, right? That's what people care about at the end of life. And so if you're in that moment, get really clear with yourself about, like, if my life were to end tomorrow, if I walked outside and God forbid I got hit by a bus, would I be happy with how I spent today? And if the answer is no, it should feel like an emergency that you change it. I always want to be able to answer that question with, if I went to bed tonight and I didn't wake up tomorrow, would I be happy that this was my last day? I always want that answer to be yes. And that's true for everyone. Everyone we're worried about is going to judge us. They're all going to die. In 15 years after you die, no one will remember you for the most part. 100 years after that, no one will remember at all. So, like, all the things that we're so worried about, like, they don't really matter. You could literally tomorrow decide to, like, shave your head and buy a small dog and move to Berlin and change your name. And in 3 weeks, that would just be your life and no one would care.
Well, so we often forget how each of us with our choices can have a positive impact in the world. How do you feel you are making the world a better place?
I really think of my work as being a mission because I do believe that the more people are really being themselves and really sharing their gifts, skills, and talents, what makes them unique, the better the world becomes. I genuinely believe all of us came to Earth and incarnated onto this planet, that we came into this human life with unique gifts, with unique skills, with unique talents, with things that we're meant to share that only we can share. And then we get caught up in running a rat race and paying bills and keeping lights on and family systems and all these things that kind of make us forget that we're here to have a unique mission. And we are all interconnected and interdependent, but you came here with a unique mission. And so the more people become alive to what they feel like they're here to do and pursue it, those people become happier. Those people become more fulfilled. Those people become more lit up. They start sharing things that really matter, and they then have an impact on the people around them. And so I do see this as a ripple effect of people healing away from living their life to please others and into living their life to create something that only they can create. And that I think really, really matters.
So we're reaching the end of this episode, but we have a few more questions. So first of all, what type of advice would you give to anyone during their journey to self-realization?
It's not always going to feel good, and that's okay. I think sometimes we get there's so much like love and light, positivity, and like healing, looking beautiful on social media. Like it's all crystals and bubble baths and, you know, people sitting in circles and meditating, and all of that is lovely and all of those things are great. But sometimes it really is hard and looks like crying and difficult conversations and feeling lost and being scared. And so I think sometimes when those things happen, people wonder if they're doing it wrong because it feels hard. And I just want people to know that, like, even meditation sometimes doesn't feel good when you're doing it. It might feel like your brain won't shut off and you're like, oh, I just want to get to doing my stuff. Like, why am I sitting here? It doesn't always feel good while you're doing it. Setting boundaries doesn't always feel good while you're doing it. You're doing these things because they pay off afterwards in the quality of your life and in the person that you're going to become. And so I would just say, like, if you're going through moments where it feels hard and it feels challenging, that doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. That's really just part of the process, and keep going.
And really, now the last question, if you could give yourself a piece of advice, what would you say to your younger self?
Don't be so scared to go after what you really want.
Well, thank you, Sira, for joining us today and sharing your inspirational career story and wisdom with our listeners.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. And if anybody out there is in a position where you want to leave your job and start a business and you don't know how and you don't know what to do, I would love to help you. You can always come find me online. I'm here to support.
That's great. And the last message for our listeners, don't forget to subscribe to our channel. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and tune in next week for a new inspirational episode of The Career Changers. Thank you.
Thank you.